My name is Blair Galston, and the date is November 27th, 2012. I'm interviewing Dr. Don Watt of Vancouver, soon to move to Abbotsford, as a part of the BC Conference Oral History Program. Dr. Watt, do I have your permission to proceed with the interview?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And let's just start with the question. Tell me a bit about your early life, your family, the community, and your involvement in the church.
Well, I was the last of seven children born in the manse. My father was a United Church minister who came in from the Presbyterian Church at the time of Union. And my oldest brother, the first child, was a medical doctor and had trained at a time when China needed doctors. And he had hoped to get to China. By the time he finished his medical career in 1934, Mao had chased the missionaries out of China. And so he needed to find a place for a family physician and went to Port Elgin and was a doctor up there for a while. My second brother was, all our kids were active in our church wherever Dad was the minister. And Archie was Sunday school superintendent, was the next boy. And what's that big church on St. Clair Avenue? Doesn't matter. He was Sunday school superintendent there. They got involved in the church.
Whereabouts in St. Clair?
Well, it was St. Clair almost east.
I should mention that we also have Grant Bracewell here listening in on the conversation, and we'll be adding a few words here and there.
Bobby Deer Park?
No. Bob Burrows' wife. Bob Burrows was in Sunday school at this big church on St. Clair.
Oh, I thought he was an agent court, not Sergeant Court. Never mind. Sorry.
Okay, because he knew Archie was his Sunday school superintendent.
Ooh.
So, anyway, there was five boys and two girls in our family. Two of my brothers were United Church ministers and graduated from the college in Toronto.
Emmanuel
College. Mm-hmm. Both of them were in the Air Force, and after they had already had a couple of years at Emmanuel, and Emmanuel, I guess, looked after the feast, as they did with most military personnel, through the balance of their training. And both my sisters married, and I came along. I was in the Air Force for a couple of years and got my wings and whatnot, and graduated from Uplands, Ontario, with my wings as a sergeant pilot, and we thought we were going overseas. And they told us, no, we don't need pilots now for overseas work. But we're not going to discharge you. We're going to transfer you to Class E. And if things flare up in the East with Japan, we'll call you back. We thought we were going on the Spitfires and everything overseas once we graduated at Uplands. So anyway, So they said to us, "So you fellas want to go out and get a job or go on further in your education? We will cover your expenses for the same length of time you had been in the armed services." And I had been 2 years. If you are in the top quarter of your graduation class, which if you decide to go to university or school, or if you decide to take more training and can stay in the top quarter, no problem. We pay your way for the number of years you've been in school. And if you stay in the top quarter of your graduating class, as long as you're up there, we'll pay your way through your course.
Oh.
And so they paid my way off to a medical school. Dad didn't have any money. He ended up at Vaughan Road, at least Vaughan Road United Church. And then they called him to Grimsby. I finished my high school in Grimsby. Yeah. Vaughan Road Collegiate in Toronto to start with, and all the boys had paper routes. That's the way we paid for our clothes.
And that was in the 1930s, was it?
Yeah, yes. 1930s. And Arthur came home from his first day in medical school, University of Toronto. He graduated in 1934, and I heard him saying, "Mom, you know, Mom, I didn't realize that everybody didn't have patches in the seat of their pants." Typical minister's family.
Yeah.
All the boys had paper routes when they were growing up. Anyway, so when I graduated, meanwhile I had gone to see Dr. McDonald, who was secretary of the Board of Home Missions at that time. Mm-hmm. My brother Arthur, in his final year, had taken a chance to do summer work with Dr. Darby in Bella Bella, and was so impressed with the Indian work, and he wrote every week, he wrote a letter home to Mom about working with the Indians and the fish boats and the canneries on the west coast, so anyway, he thought that would be a good chance if he's going to go to China. This is, you know. So he graduated, and at the time he graduated, China was closed to missionaries. So he went up to Port Arthur. But what else?
So did that inspire you?
Yeah, I was. Those letters. He just thought it was great. So when I went to see Dr. M.C. McDonald, and as I was getting close to the end of my high school years, and to see if they had a spot in church maybe for me as a doctor, because I wanted to go into medicine, and he says, "You come and see me when you get closer to graduating." So that's fine. So I went and saw him when I had one more year to go in medicine. He says, "It looks like we may need you, but I can't be sure. It looks like in BC we may need you on one of our coastal hospitals, but I can't be sure of that." So I came away from that meeting and I thought, well, gee, I had read all these books by the East Coast by that Dr.
Grenfell.
So I wrote the Grenfell Mission to see if they were going to have any openings. And I got a letter right back saying, "Yeah, we're going to need somebody at our hospital on the mainland."
Oh.
Off the end.
Labrador?
In Labrador. So keep in touch. So it just so happened that I did my interning at Toronto Western Hospital, And one of our senior staff people there at the time was Bob Salter, who had had 2 years in the Grenville Mission and came back to get his surgical degree. So I spoke to Bob and I said, Bob, you know, I may have a chance to go to the West Coast of BC in one of our United Church work, or the Grenville Mission says that they may well have a spot for me in Labrador. He says, will you be by yourself in the Charlottes in BC? I said, yes, I will. He says, go to the Charlottes. Mm. He says, you'll learn more there by yourself. And if you go to Labrador, you'll be cutting in time for the surgeon doing all his stuff. And a good experience, I'm sure. But so I went to see Dr. McDonald. Well, he says, that's fine if you think you'd like to go. It looks like we're going to need you in the Charlottes. So you keep in touch with me. So that's how I got into that. So I did a couple of years internship, and I did extra obstetrics.
Who'd you follow in the Charlottes?
Surgeon.
Who did you follow in the Charlottes?
I followed a young fellow who was there for 2 years, and he came from Vancouver. They were active in that church. I'd know his name to hear it.
Eddie Singer?
Yeah, Singer.
Oh, good for you, Graham.
I went to Eddie's funeral at Ryerson.
Mm.
And that's when I heard our present fella in the church that just got there.
Oh, Gary Patterson.
Patterson, who was minister at Ryerson. And Eddie Singer died a year after he had been with us. And Dr. Patterson had his funeral. And I thought it was one of the nicest funerals I had ever heard. And that's why I would have voted for him.
Yeah. Now, before we get any further in your story, I was going to ask you about your education and if you had any particular role models at that time of your life or mentors?
I think Dr. Darby would be the one that stood out. Mm-hmm. My brother Arthur, the oldest in our family, the kids, and he was a bit of a role model.
Mm. Your own brother?
Yeah, my own brother. Every time we sat down for dinner at night, 10 of us at the table, 7 kids and mom and dad. And my 2 sisters and mom would get the meal ready. And after the meal, the boys took over. Whose turn is it to do the dishes? You know.
Yep.
And we took turns doing this. But I remember Arthur. Let's see, whose turn? And Arthur always said, well, I'll look after Don. He'd take me and take me into the living room while the other 4 boys had to decide who. And he'd play the piano. And he'd just go up and down that keyboard. And a beautiful piano player and violin player. He played in the symphony orchestra in London.
Is that right?
For a while.
London, Ontario.
Because he had a heart attack at Port Elgin after 3 years. Oh. There was 3 doctors in Port Elgin. One fella joined the services, and so they needed Arthur to go there, and that's where Arthur went. And as soon as Art went up there, the oldest guy retired. So then there was 2 of them there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one went into the army. And Art was alone, and he was going night and day, and he had a heart attack. So the Toronto cardiologist told him, you got about 6 months to live, and that's it. I'm sorry, but you've damaged your heart. And one of the other staff men who was also a cardiologist but it wasn't the chief cardiologist, said to Arthur, "Art, I think you ought to go down to Boston and see Dr. So-and-so." And he was the guy at that time famous. Leave your car at home and go to work on a bicycle.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that?
No, you're very good.
And you need the exercise. So go and see him. So Arthur went down and saw him. And, okay, he says, you get out of family medicine. He says, get a job where you're a 9-to-5-er, and that's it. And so what he did, and he lived for another 15 years, I guess. But anyway.
Yeah, so he was a big figure in your life at that time.
So he was a.
And Dr. Darby as well.
Yeah, and Dr. Darby. And when I got to know Ted Whiting, Ted was a great fellow in our work too. And he was a tough old Irishman, you know. You knew Ted.
Yeah.
And
He left Ballygully just before I went there, but I got to know him when I was working on the boats.
Yeah. Well, he was a great guy. His wife was a nice lady too. And so anyway, I had lots of good examples.
Mm-hmm. And then when you went to Queen Charlotte City, what was your experience like there?
Just before you leave the family, I think you should name your two brothers who were United Church ministers.
Yeah, well, they were both in the Air Force. As soon as things kind of erupted, Bob and George, they both went into the Air Force. George went in a year after Bob went in. Bob had already had 2 years in theological college, but George had one, I think. Because when they come out of the services, they paid his fees through theological colleges. They were all mine. And neither one of them got out of Canada in the Air Force. Bob was wanted to fly. Went to Goderich for his elementary flying training school, but he was okay on the flying. He liked that, but the aerobatics got him. His stomach just wasn't for him. So they took him anyway, and he never got out of Canada. He went to the bombing and gunnery school. That's where they put him, in Jarvis, Ontario. And so he was in the big planes, and they weren't doing aerobatics, and that was fine. He wrote a number of sermons about flying, night flying in the big planes. My dad had kept all his sermons, and both George and Bob got a hold of these sermons, and his sermon would be on a page like that, you know. And George liked flying, and he got twin engine flying and got his wings in that. So I came along then, and I thought I would go into the Navy, but both brothers in the Air Force, I thought, well, I'll go into the Air Force. So when I come out of there, it was 1945, they said, we don't need you guys now, but we're not going to discharge you, we're going to put you in Class E and call you back if we need you.
So the brothers' names that went into the ministry were Bob and George Walker.
That's right.
Yeah.
Bob was the oldest.
George and Robert.
George and Robert Walker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And George was out in the prairies, and Bob had 2 years on the prairies, but then came back to Toronto. And was in several of the Toronto churches.
Uh-huh.
So anyway.
So getting back to Queen Charlotte City, this was your first experience, I guess, in running a hospital.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. What was that like?
Well, I enjoyed it up yeah. there. And I didn't think I was going to enjoy it. The first week I was there, I'd only been there 2 days when the nurse came up to tell me, Dr. Watt, they're bringing a lady down from Tillel, halfway to Massett on the Green Charlotte. And she's been pretty sick for 2 days. Abdominal pain. And they'll be here in another hour, sort of thing. So anyway, they brought her in. She had an acute appendix. And it had ruptured. Her whole tummy was... And she was in her 60s, late 60s, I guess, because her son was the highway superintendent for the lower end of the Charlottes. And, so anyway, we operated on her immediately and got her filled up with what needed to be done, and we washed out her abdomen and got most of the pus out of there that we could, and got her on a big dose of antibiotics. And the old hospital in the Charlottes was used to be an apartment building, a two-story old apartment building. The cellar wasn't cemented, it was just dug earth down there. We had the, so that was my introduction to anybody very sick. So after that, things kind of settled down, and I was 2 years there then, and my, when I was taking my junior rotating internship, they had come in and announced to the 150 in our class, all ex-service, 5 women and the rest all fellas, that Toronto Western Hospital are looking for 3 doctors, 3 medical students, in their final year, willing to come in and get their room and board rent free if they will take a rotation of 1 every 3 nights being on call from 5 o'clock at night till 7 a.m. in the morning for x-ray. And you can go in and spend the first summer as a junior intern, if you like, on x-ray, and then you'll start taking call 1st September. We'll do you pay your laundry, give you your meals, give you a room, 2 to a room, telephone in the middle, a little table, and cots on both sides, and you had your own room. But and it got so, you know, when you weren't on call, every third night you'd be on call. And the third guy was, he was in a different room. But anyway, if the phone rang and you were on call, you heard it. And if you weren't on call, I never heard the phone call. You know, it just, you got that way. So I had that training in x-ray. And when I had finished there, the top of the radiology was a real nice guy, a young fellow, graduating. He says, we'd like you to stay on. If you'd stay on, we'll train you in x-ray radiology. Well, I said, I promised the church I'd. So for 3 years, after I left there, and 2 at the, or 4 in the Charlottes, he'd write me letters about June, said, I'm still holding a spot if you'll come. So I said, no, gee, I think I'm kind of stuck here. And he was a real nice fellow. But we had a little one of these mobile X-ray units. I've forgotten how many milliamps now they, you know, but about 5 minutes to get a hand on a. But I use that up there, and I roll around in that X-ray. And we had a lot of interesting cases come in and get X-rays on them. And I had lots of fun with radiology. I enjoyed it. So it was a good experience. Only once did I get a chance to go hunting. They have elk on the islands.
Deer.
On the Charlottes. And the forestry guy and the fishery guy, these were other professionals that were our friends up there, you see. Mm-hmm. And a couple of other men used to go hunting every fall, and they wanted me to go hunting with. But before that happened, the fellow that had worked my opposite one on call in my fourth year of my training at the Dr. Ellingham, I phoned him and I said, you know, Frank, I'm too busy up here. Why don't you come on up? And when I had done some extra training in surgery and radiology and obstetrics, Frank had done surgery. And I said, we need a guy up here. And I said, I'll do the anesthetics, you come on up and we'll work as a team. And he did. He came up for 2 years.
Okay.
I told him that I'd be here for probably 4 years, but at the end of 2 years I got this call. And so I left Frank, and he only stayed a year after I left, and we got another person to come in. And so.
And after that you went to?
I went to Delacour. So I've had it's been a great experience, and we meet a lot of nice people. And we were always close to the minister, and we were a unit. We're church, hospital, most of us sang in the choir or whatever on Sundays. But and we had a good, we had nurses from all over Canada would come up, and some local ones, but we always had to augment them with nurses from elsewhere in Canada. And and I did a lot of speaking in churches when I was on my holidays. You know, I would, wherever I was, here I was there, and look at how'd you like that. And I'd fill in for the minister who was on holidays.
Sure.
And that was all right. I didn't mind that.
Yeah.
So it was a great experience. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking that when you came to BC, that it may have been the first time that you would get acquainted with some of the First Nations people.
Yeah, it was. My dad, Arthur had experience with the, where was it, the, it was up in Owen, no, just a minute, north of where he was in Ontario, Port Elgin. There were Indians up in
the Ojibwe? Ojibwe people?
Yeah, up in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he knew them, and he remembered his summer at Bella Bella. And we all liked fishing, you know, and he was a great fisherman, Archie was, and George and Bob and I, we were all brook trout fishermen, and boy, when I went out west, it was salmon.
Salmon and steelhead.
And steelhead, yeah.
He was a very average fisherman.
Oh, is that right? And when you went to Bella Coola, that's when you met Grant, or had you met him?
Yeah, that's when I met Grant. And the word from Toronto was, okay, we got you covered up there now. Somebody taking your place on the Charlottes. And you fly to Prince Rupert on so and such a date and go down and see Ted Whiting at Hazelton. Take the bus. And he will explain what you're going into in Bella Coola and why we need you. A brief phone call from Secretary of the Board of Home Missions in Toronto. So when I got there, Ted Whiting says, now, this is the problem, and okay, you get the bus tomorrow and go to Rupert, and the ferry will be in on its return trip to Vancouver from...
Well, it'd either be the Charlottes or Portsmouth.
I just went back to Prince Rupert.
Yeah, but the ferry, you said it was from either of those places and then down to Ocean Falls.
Yeah, from...
Prince Rupert to Ocean Falls.
Yeah. Hmm. And he says, when you go to Ocean Falls, the United Church minister from Bella Coola will be over in a borrowed fish boat to meet you at Ocean Falls. And he'll take you to Queen Charlotte City.
To Bella Coola.
To Bella Coola.
Bella Coola, I mean, yeah. So, and this is when I met Grant.
Yeah.
And I remember Grant saying, well, this is Sammy's fish boat. Who's an Indian boy, but active in our church, married one of our nurses. And we'll go, and Grant knew a certain amount about boats because he was there to take me back through the channels and up into Bella Coola. And I remember him saying a couple of times, gee, I hope the church is still standing. I
said,
why wouldn't it? Well, he says, the town's a little upset about their doctor being pulled away when he was only had a couple of weeks there or something.
He'd been there 2 years.
Oh, 2 years.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we got there and the church was still standing and the hospital was still standing. And then I found out when I got there, there were at least three or four people active in logging and whatnot in Bella Coola, who had been my patients in Queen Charlotte.
Oh, you're kidding.
And they knew me, and they were also part of the
Board of Trade.
Board of Trade. And I joined the Board of Trade, and we had a good time there, and they were a good bunch of people.
And you were there for 6 years, was it? Or you were in that position?
6 years.
Was there any particular differences in the practice in Bella Coola from the Charlottes? Or was it pretty much similar?
Bella Coola was a two-man stand.
When you first went there.
No, that's true. And eventually became three-man stand.
Yeah, Hugh came about 2 years after you did.
Yeah. And Hugh was returned missionary from... Remember, was it China?
Hugh went to Korea after he'd been in Bella Coola.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Hugh Rose.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway. I guess he had gone to Korea.
But he went after.
Yeah.
And then he came back and qualified in...
ophthalmology.
Took Murray's place, Dr. Murray in Korea. He went back to Korea.
Yeah. Well, so we had a good bunch of staff, and they were nice people, and I enjoyed my time in our hospital work. And when we went down, when I took over from what Dr. Darby did, I made a point of going to each of our hospitals for their annual meetings.
And that's when you were superintendent?
Yeah, I was superintendent.
Of medical.
And I got to know the Bards and Eriksdale, Manitoba, and
Lamont.
Lamont, and got to know the doctor out there, great guy. And I went up to see Margaret, the old lady, elderly lady, up at the lake,
Birds Lake? Birds Lake?
No.
Oh.
No, in
Eriksdale.
Yeah, no, Eriksdale, Manitoba. That was an interesting doctor out there. These were all people that had come in from. They came in through Hudson Bay, anyway, from their place, and well, they were a good bunch of people. Cold Lake, Alberta.
Oh, yeah.
Cold Lake.
Margaret, the elderly lady, doctor.
Mm.
And before we left there, we met with the medical staff of the Cold Lake
Air Depot.
Airport. Mm. To say, look at, you know, way up here, and you got your doctor in town here. Surely he could take clinics in this hospital, because the lady doctor was older, and she wasn't too well, and eventually died of CA.
So, Dr. Watt, tell us now about some of the locum work that you did in the various hospitals.
Well,
whereabouts did you go?
Well, I filled in a lot at Bella Bella and Hazleton and Bella Coola, and I didn't fill in Lamont because they had a pretty good staff of three doctors out there, and but I went to their annual meetings. They also had a nurses' training school there.
Mm.
And I remember having to speak at their graduation. Marley Young was their senior doctor at the great churchman, too. And about then we were starting our work in Newfoundland. Well, not about then, but after I'd been doing it in BC and in Western Canada, I didn't have to do much at Eriksdale because they had a real good Scandinavian doctor there. And about every 3, 4, 5 months, I'm guessing, he knew he shouldn't be looking after patients. He would lock his door. And he had been celebrating for that weekend. And so there was no point in them calling him, and he knew enough to know that he shouldn't practice medicine when he had been trained.
Uh-huh.
And I happened to be there at the annual meeting of the hospital, and a lady in labor. And yeah. I had to leave the ward meeting and deliver this lady in the obstetrics, because I said, "Where's the doctor?" Oh, well, he's indisposed. And he
lucky
won't answer his phone or answer the door. That's the only work I did at Eriksdale, but I used to go to their annual meetings. And he was a nice guy, the doctor.
Yeah.
And
you ended up going to Bay Verte?
Well, yeah. Then, you see, Bay Verte were after us. You may remember more than I. To come down and have a hospital. They had a spot down there in Bay Verte, which the main industry was asbestos mine. And they needed the doctor down there, so I went down, and to help me was a good churchman, but an elderly doctor. He was in the 70s, but good cardiologist, a nice fellow, real nice fellow. And anyway, we ended up with three doctors down there, and we expanded the work, and we did clinic trips into the little outports, and eventually put one of our doctors down in, do you remember the name of the little fishing village at the far eastern end of what we looked at?
No, I don't.
Anyway, we put the doctor there. And I would go down, and I worked at Bayvert initially for a few months to get help us get started. And then we got a dentist to come in, and we had three doctors there eventually, and it was busy. And we had a lot of interesting work regarding asbestos, and we would take x-rays, and one of our doctors was a specialist, and he'd look at the chest x-ray and say they got some fading in it, of guys who had worked in the asbestos mill for a number of years. And we approached the company, and they said we'll send it to our man in New York, and the answer would come back, nothing wrong with this man, his x-rays are right, and so on. So we were fighting that sort of thing until finally we won. Had a little trouble with the union down there. The radiologists and people went on strike. It was the people in charge, not the medical people, but x-ray technician, the lab technician, this sort of thing. It was a union thing. And anyway, this fella drove 40 miles with his little boy, who had jumped off their porch and twisted his ankle, and he came in with a big swollen joint. I said, well, I have to, and the dad drove 40 miles from the far end up to the hospital. And the x-ray technology says, well, doctor, we can't take an x-ray because we're on strike. I said, well, you just can keep out of the way. And I said, I'll take the x-ray. And, oh, no, you can't do that. You'd be strike-breaking. I said, no, I wouldn't. If you did it, you'd be strike-breaking. And I said, I'm the doctor, and I want to get a picture of this lad. So, anyway, he phoned his headquarters, and I went ahead and took the x-ray, because I knew all about x-ray. Well, I got a good picture, and he didn't have a fracture, but, you know, we got him bandaged up and told him to keep his leg up for a while. But I got one of the ministers in St. John's phoned me and said, Don, don't cause a problem with the union. No, I said, I have no problem with the union. They're on strike. So they're not in the picture. As far as I'm concerned, I got a patient here that drove 40 miles with a little boy that's in pain, and I'm going to take a picture. So that was the only little difficulty.
That's a great story. During your career, has there been any particular low point or most challenging part of your work that you might need?
Oh, I enjoyed the time with medicine there. It was discouraging at times if we had shortages of staff. I did a lot of speaking in churches and the ministers, it's great if there was a guy going to be available, they'd have that Sunday off, and most of them were overworked anyway, and gee, we'll get Don to come in and tell us about the work he's doing now. So, and I would push the thing, we need nurses. We had doctors come in. I don't know whether you remember, Grant, you wouldn't. Anyway, we had specialists from here come up. Fred Bryan's one of the top obstetricians here in Vancouver. Great churchman here. And he came up and gave us a week up in Delacoula, and he'd have clinics with there was three of us then, three doctors there, and nurses to discuss any interesting patient we had in and what we were doing. And I took him once, and I made clinic trips regularly from Delacoula up to Anaheim Lake. We had to go up this new road up to Anaheim Lake. It was up in the, and very interesting. And I think, which hockey team was it that had their goalie from Anaheim Lake?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, he was a good goalie. And his home in Anaheim Lake. And I think it was a mixed.
We'll have to look that up.
Anyway.
One of the main, very important thing you did in Delacoula was recruit Coleman, that dentist, to come in on his holidays to give dental work in the valley.
We did the same in the Charlottes to start with. My dentist here, a real nice guy, he was a member of the United Church. He would give us a couple of weeks up there. He'd send his wife up the week before, and she was one of these, dental assistant.
Dental assistant.
And she would line up a group, mostly Indian, to get their teeth done. And we ran into a lot of this. Well, it's got to come out, Doc. Would you pull it? Just pull it. No, that can be saved. I said, you know, we can, I don't fell things, but you should go over to Rupert, unless you're prepared to wait for Dr. Gardner to come up. And after, he would come and give us 2 weeks, a couple of times a year. And he was a top dentist down here. And anyway, we, so I pulled a lot of teeth.
With the history of no dental, there was one 16, really nice looking 16-year-old girl when I got there, had two full plates.
Yeah.
At 16 years old.
Yeah, and the idea was you got to get rid of them eventually. You may as well get them all out to start with and then get a nice plate. And I said, no, you can save that molar, or you can save this one. So that was an interesting part of our work, pulling teeth and looking after sick animals. And this was all part of your patients. Had a dog in trouble or a cow in trouble.
Oh,
and
really?
What do you do? Well, I don't know. Why don't you take them to Williams Lake, 300 miles?
It's so far away.
Yeah. And it wasn't always successful. Gee, I was up there, and the baker wanted me to spay his big collie, a nice big collie. But she had pups running all over the village, you know. And so I said, well, I don't do this. And I never charged for any work to animals. And, well, he says, I've 300 miles to go, and then it'll cost me so many, a couple of $100, get her spayed. So I phoned the vet in Williams Lake. And I said, I don't want to cut you out of stuff, but this guy says he's not going in that far. He's the baker. He's busy. Oh, he says, you can do it there, for goodness sakes. And he says, you make your midline incision and you reach in and sweep your fingers up the inside wall of the abdomen, and you'll feel a couple of little cords running along. Just tie them off. That'll do it. So it seemed real simple, and I had her come in, bring the dog in. We put her down, and I made incision, and I didn't feel what I should have felt. I could feel a number of things in there, and I didn't want to cut in the bowel or anything else. Anyway, I cut what I thought was the thing, and
was it
and he wanted to know, well, now, how much that. I said, I don't charge for this kind of work. I like animals, and I hope that'll be all right, but I'm no specialist, and I've never done this before. Oh, that's all right, Doc, you know. So I don't know, 6 months, or it's probably the following year, and my trip in there to Bella Coola. The baker wants to see you. I said, what do you think this is about? And they said, I don't know, but there's lots of collies running around town. So I must have kept the wrong card anyway. But I said, I'm sorry. I said, that's not my specialty.
Thank you for that. Looking back over the years, what is most important to you about your work as a doctor and within the church?
Well, I think it's a profession. It's a great profession. And in these areas where we have our outreach ministries, they're short of special care, particularly in the medical work. It was worse then than maybe it is now. I think we still have three up in Bella Coola, which wasn't bad. We got a lot of things through, you know. We got a through the board through the Board of Home Missions about that these guys should have so many weeks leave. Not for holiday time, but post-grad leave. And we should keep them on salary. The government paid their salaries. And part of my job is to go to Victoria and sit down with the guys. And they were good. They were happy to see us in these outlying areas with our work. And they would say to me at the end, well, okay, they approved the budget. And they said, are you sure this is enough to cover what you're doing? Yeah, I said, that'll meet our costs. And they were very happy to have us doing these things. And with our housing stuff, I got that under medical services, but I got the government to pay for it. Anything, a new fridge here or a new something there, and because this is where we had our doctors, and we would say to them, you come and work for us, we rent free house, and travel, meet your travel to post-grad training, and cost of courses, we'd meet this, and government knew what we were doing. And the care we were giving, and we got our hospitals accredited, which was an important thing. The government were just tickled pink. And you know, a lot of congregations when we'd go and speak to them about it would say, you know. You know, the doctors get their houses rent free, and I said you get your manses, and maybe there's a bit of a charge now, but I don't know. But, I'm trying to think what's going on in St. Stephen's, but anyway, So there are a lot of things can be done if the government can plan. That's all they want to know. This is your budget. Now, will that hold you for a year? And then you come back in a year's time. We'll see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they didn't mind that kind of money.
Because we were filling in a gap.
We were filling a gap they couldn't fill in.
Yep.
So I found it very encouraging work, and I enjoyed that. If I was doing it again, I don't know if I would do that. I think it was pretty hard on my wife. She was a nurse.
Oh, was she?
And we had four kids.
And what's your wife's name? Pardon me for not
June.
June.
Thank you. And however, things went well, and I enjoyed my time. And we meet guys like Grant here.
Yeah.
We had to straighten them out theologically.
Very good. Now, when you were working up north, there were many more hospitals run by the United Church than there are now. Is that correct? Or supported by the United Church?
No, there's Bella Bella. And Bella Coola, I guess those two. We did have a doctor in Charlotte's back in the 1980s. And then when we went up, we spasmodically had ministers with medical training. Early on,
okay,
in some of these, but then they couldn't all do this. Mm-hmm. And Burns Lake had their own two doctors, mm-hmm. but we had to fill in there part time when they left, and we filled in briefly there.
But are there any United Church hospitals now where the United Church is actually operating the hospital in BC, or they're all?
No, they're.
We got medical services that are under the United Church, but the hospitals are straight government hospitals now, aren't they?
Well, in my time, government would make the operating costs.
Oh, yeah, in your time, yeah. But Blair asked about now.
And I think they still do. I just met a couple of our fellows from Bella Coola. There's three doctors up there now.
But the United Church isn't even necessarily represented on the board of the hospital now in Bella Coola. My time, I was chair of the board.
Oh.
We got that changed.
Well, I think there are three hospitals now that the United Church supports. So.
Well, the government asked us about the Charlottes.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to, they said, we think we've got people who would like to go to the Charlottes as physicians. I said, that's fine. If they want to go in, we won't feel that's our responsibility. If you can get somebody. And so we got out of that one. If they were stuck, I'm sure we would. The La Coola, I think one doctor there is in private practice. I think two of the other ones up there are ones that I recruited initially, and and then the government may have decided, okay, we can meet these guys, and they were happy to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I have a question for you that has to do with the future. Can you offer a word of wisdom to future generations?
I think there's always a call for the mission of health within church, whether it's inner city mission, well baby clinics, that sort of thing. If it can be a full-time thing, government will meet the cost of somebody on salary. The guys at BCHIS would say to me, we don't mind meeting these costs as long as you'll give us a budget. Then we can go to our, say, this is the budget. Doesn't matter how busy these guys are, that's the budget. We need to have costs. We know what they are. You see, and you hear various talk about how much money doctors are making. And, oh, well, I've had some funny run-ins with Bob Burrows when he was chair of the board at in Toronto. And with some of the salaries, our doctors, I think, were always reasonable. And I remember saying, well, that we had put our medical services government is prepared to pay rent-free house. Medical services would pay for fridge and stove or anything. But this is the salary, and this is, you know. Government would go if you could give them a fixed salary within reason. And when I would go to Toronto and say, now this is our budget, well, we can't pay doctors more than we're paying our ministers. And Bob Burrows was the guy, you know, he was a real rascal. And Burrows, no, just a minute. Yeah, Bob Burrows. Bob's here in this presbytery now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, after he got out of the boat and a few things, he got jobs with government here, and he was making a good salary. And I felt like telling Bob. Yeah. He's a good friend of mine. Anyway, I think there will always be a need for the church to meet a need.
Mm.
That government is meeting that we feel, look at, people are suffering because.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a response the church should be willing to accept. Money is always a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if government is prepared to meet this in other people, in their ranks, gee, I look at the budget here, mayor in Toronto, and he's having his own problems. But
mm-hmm.
So I think that's where I feel the church has a need.
Okay, thank you. That's well summed up. Is there anything else that I've missed that you'd like to tell me about?
Oh, I don't know. Grant as well knows what we're doing in our medical work. That's
yeah. Is there anything you think they've missed, or Dr. Watt has missed?
We have lots.
What do you think of the fact that Bella Coola Hospital can't do obstetrics anymore because the government's, so people in Bella Coola have to go to Williams Lane for children, for babies?
I wasn't aware of this.
You didn't wear it, eh?
Yeah. But gee, I saw a guy from Now, the cooler was one that we had sent in there. You know that they had a dinner for me here not too long ago. And he came down from Bella Coola. He's up there and he's happy. And he was well trained. I don't know why he wouldn't be delivering babies, but maybe it's the combination of giving an anesthetic and delivering a baby, and if you have to do a section, send them out if you've got time. But in these places, planes don't fly after dark when they're float planes. They don't land on the water after dark, and we've got single engine float planes, beavers on floats, and they're great aircraft, and you can fly them to Williams Lake and lower at Williams Lake. The doctors weren't that too well trained. They weren't specialists, really. It may be different now. I don't know. But it wasn't then. I've been out of touch. Well, they had a big dinner for me here.
What, in Bella Coola?
No, here.
Oh. Here in Vancouver.
Yeah. And,
Hmm.
Our doctors, senior doctors, and their wives. And I was invited, and Elizabeth came as my daughter,
okay,
who's also a doctor now at Abbotsford. But I don't make any excuses for what we've done, and I think there's always a spot for people willing to get involved in the peripheries. And I spoke to one of our groups at the time that they were worried about the downtown drug things here. Do you think there's a spot for our church taking over medical work down there? After I was retired, things had really got pretty bad. Oh, they didn't think so. And all I could think of was that the guys that do work down there are on a pretty good income, which they felt the church couldn't meet. Because even in my time, when I'd go to churches, they'd say, it's good of you to come and tell us about what's going on out there, but your people are probably getting almost twice as much as what our ministers get. I
so
said,
what?
No, that's not true. But I don't, you know. I think the church will always have openings in the fringes of where people are living and have problems. Which can be looked after by people who are trained. Mm-hmm. So,
well said. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Watt, for interview.
You're very welcome. I'd like to know what's going on.
Well,
it'll be
wonderful to have this interview as part of our conference archives.
Oh.